Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
I've always had an interest in UFOs, and I, from time to time, will have people on that discuss UFO research. Myself, I've had more than one experience. I've seen a couple, and I've had something close up. So I was told about a couple of people out of Florida. Now, Rob and Trish McGregor, they're from South Florida. I believe Rob has written some Indiana Jones books. Is that correct, Rob?
That's true. I've written seven of them.
They both have their own websites. I believe they're both into several different things. The UFO Investigating, you have a new book. How are you doing, Trish?
Really good.
It's good to have you on. Thanks for joining.
We want to hear your story.
I'll tell it. But what is the name of a book that you have coming up?
It's Aliens in the Backyard, UFO Encounters, Abductions, and Synchronicity.
Synchronicity is interesting.
Yeah, that's the key part for us, the synchronicity aspect of this. We've had a long interest in the phenomena of UFOs and alien encounters, but written a number of nonfiction books related to metaphysical matters and mysticism, but we've never knew how to enter, you know, this vast topic of UFOs. So there's been so many books written already and a lot of people doing research, and until we realized that we could approach the subject from the perspective of synchronicity or meaningful coincidence, which really hasn't been done to any great extent. And so we had written two previous books on synchronicity, and this is, in essence, is our third one. It illustrates how synchronicity is intimately tied to the full spectrum of the UFO encounter experience. It was synchronicity that led us to writing the book. Our first synchronicity book, The Seven Secrets of Synchronicity, sold to about a half dozen foreign countries, including a French-Canadian publishing house. And in February of last year, just a year ago, a French-Canadian named Charles Fontaine walked into a Montreal bookstore, saw that book, and felt compelled to pick it up. He didn't read books, rarely visited bookstores, but he returned to the store the next day and bought it. And while reading it, he Googled the term UFOs and synchronicity.
Mm.
The first image that came up was from our blog, and it was eerily similar to what he had seen in his backyard a year earlier. And so he realized that the blog was that of the authors of the book he was reading, a synchronicity for him. And that's when he knew he had to contact us and tell us his story. So that's how we entered.
So there's really a connection, not just, I mean, I'm sure you guys think also there's synchronicity in life, right? Things happen.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, sure.
And there's all kinds of signs. Have you done anything with that?
Yes, we have. I mean, in Seven Secrets of Synchronicity, that's what it's about, is, you know, just how synchronicity works in your daily life, and how if you don't dismiss a coincidence as insignificant, you suddenly start realizing that this stuff happens constantly.
And is it trying to give us a message? Is it trying to tell us something? I mean, is there an answer to it, or is it just confirmation?
I think it can be confirmation. It can act as a warning.
Yeah.
It
takes some interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens, these things happen to people a lot, and but oftentimes they go unnoticed. They kind of slip past us. But when somebody has a life-changing experience, some kind of like an encounter with aliens and abduction, that's when things go through the ceiling with these kind of experiences, and that's what happened with Charles Fontaine. So he eventually became one of four individuals that we focused on for Aliens in the Backyard.
When did these incidents occur? Would they have been stretched out over time, right?
For Charles, they happened in March of 2011.
Yeah, that was
his
the most recent case.
Okay, and the other people that you have in the book, three other people.
Yes, yeah. There's a woman named Connie Cannon who has been a lifelong abductee. She was first abducted at the age of four, And now she's 70, and she really doesn't care who knows.
Right.
I mean, for years, she kind of lived this secret life. She didn't tell anybody about her experiences,
right.
you know, and lived with this terror and bewilderment just within herself.
Hmm.
And she's an ex-hospice nurse. And then we have a woman named Diane Fine, who has been involved in paranormal research. She's been a corporate bookkeeper. She's been a bookstore manager. And she's had a variety of experiences. And the reason we used her is because she also had a missing pregnancy, which Dr. Jacobs, David Jacobs, covered pretty extensively in one of his books.
And something was taken from her?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't... Her story is really intriguing. I mean, before she was, you know, at the age of 18, she had had three surgeries for cystic ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there's cysts in your ovaries.
Right.
And she was told she would never be able to get pregnant.
Right.
And suddenly, one day, she started, you know, feeling nauseated and everything, and went to her OB, who said, "You are pregnant." And because this was 1979, at that time there was really no, because she was considered high risk, there was no facility in upstate New York, so he sent her to a facility in Burlington, Vermont. But anyway, go ahead, tell them about Bruce. We'll get into Diane's story in a minute.
Right. And the fourth person is Bruce Gernon.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're familiar with Bruce.
Yep.
His experiences in the Bermuda Triangle, where he took off on a flight from Andros Island to West Palm Beach, and
mm-hmm.
his life was changed in December of 1970.
Yeah, and I know Bruce told me, you know, as well, that he's seen a lot of UFOs in the Triangle area. So
right, and when we wrote a book together called The Fog.
Right.
And,
okay.
When we wrote The Fog, Bruce really wanted to avoid the UFO connection to the Bermuda Triangle, because he, like a lot of people who have these experiences, they're worried about being called UFO nuts and and minimalized and marginalized rather. And as I talked to him, you know, I realized we can't avoid this. So we put in one chapter related to UFOs and his experiences, because he's had some incredible UFO experiences, but he wanted to stick with this idea of electronic fog that the Bermuda Triangle phenomena is related to a geometeorological phenomenon.
Right.
But now he has come around, and he has realized that cloud that he went around, that lenticular cloud
that he went through.
He went around it first, then it formed like a donut around him. Might very well have hidden a UFO.
Mm. And so it could have been artificial intelligence that created that wormhole or whatever that was.
Right.
That he went through.
Through that, and he feels that hole he went through in the cloud. I mean, this cloud completely surrounded the plane. I mean, there was a donut hole of about 10 miles across or so, 10 to 15 miles, and the arms of the two clouds were coming together, and he saw the one opening there that was still visible, and they flew right towards it. He was with his father and a friend,
mm-hmm.
and it formed a tunnel. He went right through it, and all the instruments went haywire. The magnetic compass was spinning, and all the electronic equipment was out. And for 10 seconds, they felt as if they were floating, as if there was zero gravity. And then they come out into this gray soup, and they don't have any idea what direction they're going. They can't see the horizon, can't see the sky, they can't see the ocean. And in a dangerous, precarious situation, he contacts the Miami Tower, and that only complicates matter, because the tower says there are no planes on radar from Andros to Bimini to West Palm Beach or to Miami. There are no planes visible at all on the radar right now. And that's when his father just, was starting to really lose it, because he was great navigator himself, a pilot and navigator, and was very upset that they were certain they were about, I think, about 45 miles yet from Bimini and about 95 miles from Miami. And suddenly, there's a silence from the radio for about two minutes, and then the controller comes back on and he says, "Wait a minute, we have a plane coming right over Miami Beach now." And Bruce said, "No, we've only been flying 34 minutes. There's no way we could be here yet." But yet, then the clouds broke up. He looks down and he recognizes Miami Beach and realizes that somehow they had moved about 100 miles in no time at all. And so he always thought of this as time travel, that they were pushed ahead in time,
right?
Which is one possibility. Another possibility is that they were teleported
mm-hmm.
right from one space to another, because we have another experience where somebody in a ship working for AUTEC had that same experience of instantly being moved 100 miles. And
well,
this is somebody who still works at AUTEC.
Yeah.
I think Bruce told me that, you know, he has that scientist buddy in Nebraska, University of Nebraska, that's working mm-hmm. with him, and they estimated his speed at 2,400 miles an hour to
right.
go that fast.
Which would disintegrate an air, that airplane.
And his Bonanza goes 200 miles top, you know.
Yeah, right. Tops, right. Yeah.
So I thought, well, something's going on there. So, yeah. And he even told me a story about another man who actually went back in time. Did he ever tell you that story? Where he told me, you know, since he started telling his story, people would write to him. And somebody actually wrote to him that their grandfather, who was fighting World War II or something like that.
Oh, I hadn't heard
actually,
wow, we'll have to ask him about that.
Actually went back a day in time because he was supposed to be at a certain location. He overshot it. He thought, oh, I'm going to be in trouble. And so he spent the night at this place, and then he got back, and he found out he was there the same day. You know, it's like,
wow.
Oh, you haven't left yet, or did you... You're back already? It's like, and, you know, people tell you stories, and I think they're being genuine, don't you, when you hear...
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, why would people make up stuff like this, you know?
Some people might. Have you guys had any kind of experiences yourself? Lots of them?
Yeah, well, we are not, we don't consider ourselves abductees, but we had an experience, unusual experience ourselves, close to the time we met, when our lives, both of our lives were really changing after... We had lived a life where we had this interest in the paranormal, UFOs, but we were surrounded by people who had no interest in it at all, and so it was kind of on the back burners of both of our lives until we met each other. Then things started changing because it just opened both of us up. And one day, shortly after we met, I suggested, "Trish, why don't we get a Ouija board and try a Ouija board and see what happens?" And boy, did something happen!
Mm.
Supposedly, it took a little while before it started moving. Then it started moving rapidly, and supposedly we were in contact with an entity on a spacecraft, a UFO, and giving us all the messages, information. And then we said, well, I was a newspaper reporter at the time. Trisha was a teacher. And the newspaper reporter in me said, well, I want some proof that you're really on a UFO
mm-hmm.
and on a spacecraft. And what next came is that tonight, go to the airport and watch the sky.
Mm.
And so it was, you know, it was going to be pretty late, and I had to be to work the next morning, but, you know, it was a new relationship, you know. So,
sense of adventure.
Yeah,
right.
So we went out together about 1 o'clock, and that was the old days of Fort Lauderdale Airport, where you could just pull up to the fence and watch the planes take off, you know, on the outside of the fence. And so we did that, and we hung around for about an hour or so. No UFOs, just not too much air traffic mm-hmm. at all. And so we thought, well, so much for this. And we each headed home. But the next day I had to be cover a school board meeting right away, 8 o'clock in the morning. I had to call in the story by 10 o'clock, and you know, I was dead tired. And then I came into the office, and I had to do a follow-up on that story. And I was typing away at the second... for the second deadline, and there was a reporter next to him in the next desk typing. She was typing away at the same deadline, and we finished about the same time. And I looked over at her, and I said, so what have you been writing about? And she said, there was a UFO sighted last night over Perry Airport. I said, what? And this was a smaller airport, 10 miles from
Lauderdale,
from the Lauderdale Airport. And so that my story was buried somewhere inside, and her story was on the bottom of the front page about the this was because it was reported by the sheriff's office. The police saw it hovering over the airport. So that night, Trish and I got together, drove down to Perry Airport to see if there would be a reappearance. And again, we sat there and saw nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But when we left, I turned on the radio, and something odd was on. It was like an old-time drama, a radio drama like from the 30s, you know, before television.
Right.
And one of the characters, oddly enough, was an alien telling this story, and it just blew my mind. You know, here we had have all this aliens-related things going on, and at that moment I turn on the radio and find an alien talking on the radio in a drama, so... That's our experience, you know.
It's also an experience of synchronicity.
Yeah, that's what I was just going
right.
to say. It's
right.
Synchronicity, and that's how we entered it in the beginning.
So, you haven't really seen a UFO per se, then?
Well, I have. When I was in boarding school, I was 16, and a bunch of us girls were sitting around after dark in somebody's room, which you weren't supposed to do. And I happened to look towards the window, and I saw this light, and it kept coming toward us and toward us and toward us, and then it started doing all these incredibly strange maneuvers. You know, it would stop, move rapidly upward, circle around in the way that planes don't, come back down, and the other girls in the room saw it too. So that's when I thought, okay, we're not alone.
I also had an experience when I was like 9 or 10 years old. I clearly remember standing in... an intersection near our house, which was near a dead end, and I was the only one out in the street, and this was unusual for me to be out at night by myself, but my parents, I remember them saying they wanted to see how long I would just stay out without them calling me in. Well, I was standing there by myself, I looked up, and I see these lights moving, changing color, green lights, yellow lights, blue lights, moving rapidly across the sky, back and forth, six or seven of them. And I remember clearly watching them. And then all I remember then is going back in the house. And then I told my father about this. And the next day he told me that he had heard on the radio that there was lots of reports of UFOs that night in the sky.
So. I've seen... two ships, pretty sure it was ships, and then I had a close-up visit from a gray.
Ooh.
When I was in third grade, I remember looking out the bedroom window overlooking our kitchen. I know we had two-story, and the bedroom could overlook the kitchen roof. My parents were outside, and it was a summer night, and they were in the lawn chairs. And I said, Mom, what's up in the sky? And there was this oval craft on the horizon. It had to be huge, because it was on the horizon, which was several miles away. And it had rotating lights going around of different colors, probably four or five different colors. I don't remember exactly. And it slowly just went across the horizon. And then a few years ago, maybe 6 years ago, I was driving home west of where I'm doing the show is Escanaba, right on Lake Michigan. I live west of town by about 13, 14 miles. And as I was coming to the casino, I was probably a mile or two from that, which is a couple of miles from my house. I looked up in the sky, and I was looking towards the sun, and I noticed... I couldn't see this thing all the time. Only when it turned a certain way, there was a reflection, and it was silver metallic. And then it would turn back, and it was invisible. And I thought,
wow.
Well, how come I can't see that? And then it would travel a little more, and it was not going very fast, and it was really low. It wasn't that high, you know, up in the sky, and it wasn't that big of a craft. And then it would turn a little bit, and I'd see it some more, this reflection. And so I talked to a friend of mine who's retired Air Force, and I said, I think I saw an old silver plane. And he said, there are no old silver metallic planes because that would blind people. They outlawed that back
right.
in the 60s.
Huh.
And so I know it was something else. But I couldn't get a real good look at it. In 1992, and this is probably not long after I read Whitley Strieber's book, I thought, you know, it'd be kind of cool to see one of those grays. And in somebody's book, I had read that if you really focus on it when you go to bed,
oh my God,
they'll come visit. They'll come visit you. Because whatever we put out in thought,
right,
I believe, will, you know, communicate. They can pick up our thoughts. As we all can. And so I went to bed thinking that, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I looked over, and on the left side of the bed was one of those 4 feet tall beings with the big eyes.
Wow.
And it actually was, instead of walking, it started to glide closer to me. It just looked like it was gliding. And then I noticed I couldn't hardly breathe, and I couldn't move at all. None of my arms, my shoulder, my head, I was just frozen. Like, it had a control over me, and I've heard people that have been through that's what they do.
Right, yeah.
And so I was getting pretty scared, and it moved over to the right side of the bed, and it was, like, right at the foot of it. And I thought, God, I hope he doesn't come any closer. And
hope he doesn't crawl into bed with me.
Hope he doesn't think that I'm cute, you know? I hope he doesn't think I'm cute. I like this guy. So he stops, and then a thought hits me, and you guys are going to know where this came from, right? A thought hits me. It says, if you have no intention of hurting this being, he's going to let you go. Now, where do you think that thought came from?
Wow.
That's interesting.
That is interesting.
And so I thought, well, you know what? I don't want to hurt him. I just want to see this thing. And I asked to see it. Like anything in the universe, I think if we ask sometimes, we'll see it. And
right.
So next thing you know, I could move my arms. I could move my, you know, I wasn't able to jump out of bed. He still had some control over me, but I could move my upper half, and I was so more relaxed, and my head was turning. Yes.
Oh.
And so I was out like that after that incident. And I woke up maybe 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. This happened at maybe 1 in the morning. For years, I thought, well, I was dreaming. And then I came to realize, how many dreams do you remember at 1 o'clock in the morning if you don't wake up right after them? And so that, to me, became very real. Plus, it was very real to begin with. You know, it's like, you know.
Well,
you
the fact that you asked also, you know, I don't think that's any sort of a random thing. You ask and something appears.
Absolutely.
Do you think there might have been an abduction involved that you don't recall? Is that
I remember my butt hurting for weeks. No, I'm just kidding. It's possible, you know, because I think those of us that are connected to it, they probably have been interacting with us, you know, for a long time.
Right.
So
let me tell Charles Fontaine's story, the one that got us into the book here. Charles and his wife, Helene, are conservative French-Canadian Catholics who never thought much about UFOs. And they both, they were something for, UFOs, aliens, were something from movies and TV to them. As Charles said to me, I thought if they were real, the U.S. military or government would have told us long ago.
Yeah, right.
Which seems like a real naive statement to me, but that's what he believed. So his experience began one morning late in March 2011. When their dog jumped up on the bed at 3 a.m. and started growling and barking and wouldn't get down from the bed. It was really unusual behavior, but they finally calmed the dog down and it went back to sleep. A couple hours later, 5 a.m., Charles gets up as his usual time because he lives in the countryside and drives into the city where he works in Montreal and also takes his daughter to college. So typically he let Spot the dog out the back door onto the patio to do his business. But this time the dog refused to go out, and so he gave him a little nudge with his foot, sending him on his way out the door, and then stepped out himself and noticed these odd lights in the field behind the house. And at that moment, the patio lights came on automatically as Spot tripped the sensor. And so Charles quickly turned the lights off so he could see what the lights were about in the field. And they were shaped like inverted ice cream cones and looked as if there was energy. They looked like tubes to him, tubes of light. It looked like there was some kind of energy inside, some swirling movement that was rising up. And he counted nine of these lights, these tubes of light. But he couldn't see what was above it. It was just darkness up above. But he watched it. He was just fascinated for a couple minutes. Then he said, Helene's got to see this. So he went in and woke her up, and she came out, and he was thankful that the lights were still there, and he wasn't dreaming this, and she was seeing it as well. And the odd thing was that she only counted five of them, and they were moving closer, like as if they had seen the light coming from the back porch and were moving towards him, towards the house. That was when Charles looked over to his right, and he saw a different sort of light right in the backyard. It was a vertical, rotating band of light with luminous blue O-rings that were moving inside this band. And then he saw that it was some kind of a craft with gray metallic structure on either side of the band. So it was like a saucer, but vertical rather than horizontal, moving between the weeping willow tree and the house. And he turned to get the dog to get inside, and that's when he saw the dog was surrounded by a gold light, and boom, that was the last thing he remembers until suddenly he finds himself taking a shower. He has no idea how he got the shower, what happened, but he knows that something happened. His wife had a vague dreamlike memory of being floated into bed and sinking into the bed as if she weighed 500 pounds and the bed just folding around her as she fell back to sleep. Oddly enough, there's no missing time involved. In really? Fact, it was the opposite. The time was compressed because he looked outside and it was still dark out, but he knows that something happened, that his memory was blank. But when he got out of the shower, he still had time to make it to work on time. And from that day on, for several months, he began experiencing this just astonishing assortment of synchronicities related to this experience, both him and his wife.
So people start to develop extrasensory perception.
Right, right. Yeah. And in fact, that's one of the things we talk about in the book.
So what did you, we talked prior to the interview, planetary empaths. These are people after they've been taken or had an experience, they become, what happens to them?
Well, what we noticed, we've had this blog since 2009, and since synchronicity is part of UFO encounters and abductions, we've had a number of posts about abductions. And we noticed that we started getting more and more people commenting on the blog who had abductions and really didn't have anybody to talk to about it. So they would come to our blog and just kind of release their experiences. And so around March of 2010, we put up our first post about these planetary empaths. And these empaths seem to be so attuned to the planet that they experience physical symptoms hours or days, sometimes weeks, before some sort of disaster, a tsunami, volcanic eruption,
wow.
Hurricanes.
You know what? That's interesting that you say that, because I might have a friend who.
Well, let me give you the symptoms. I mean, they're really not pleasant. These experiences are awful. Some of these people end up in ER.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bleeding from the ears with extreme vertigo, nausea, anxiety without any known cause. They have chest or abdominal pains, heart arrhythmias. You know, wildly fluctuating emotions. You know, it's a really unpleasant experience, but as soon as the event, whatever it is, happens, there's usually a release of the symptoms. So, you have a friend who experienced
it? Well, there's a friend when he was 18, he actually works here. He won't do a show with me, but because he's afraid people will, you know, you got to get past the fear. And that's
right.
Up to him. I don't ever push anybody. But he was traveling when he was 18, and something was behind him, and it actually would disappear in the woods when a car would come the opposite way. But he told me also a good part of his life he had the ability to sense things before they happened
on
a national scale, on a national level. But he
didn't
suffer like you're talking about. He just
knew. Well, a lot of these people don't. What they have is really vivid dreams or just almost an overwhelming sensation of helplessness, visions, you know, that kind of thing.
Do you have any explanation, Rob and Trish, of why is this happening, and is it something that they're trying to warn us about?
Well, you know, a lot of these abductees are shown scenes of natural disasters and planetary changes when they're abducted. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the message is, you humans have done this to the Earth, you know, and it's not going to get any better, and we're here to help. That's one scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these abductees, these two women we talk about in the book, Diane Fine and Connie Cannon, have both, they were both lifelong abductees, so their symptoms are really pronounced.
Mm.
And Diane was shown these scenes between her abductions for like 1970s to the 1990s, and she would like be in a ship, and this is one of the experiences that happened in the 70s before iPads and computers and that kind of thing. And she said there was a screen that was just lit up, kind of like a plasma TV screen, with these natural disasters, just one after another. So she feels that her thing, I mean, she was born intuitive, but over the years, she's 52 now, these experiences have gotten more and more pronounced, and her health has been really compromised.
Mm.
Then there's another aspect of the what appears to be some kind of a hybrid program, at least on the surface.
Right.
Where they're,
right.
Taking sperm and eggs and making their own creatures related to themselves, and putting them, raising them in tubes, sometimes putting them back into the woman who goes out and supposedly has a child that is a hybrid, or they have the hybrids that are raised right on their crafts. Now, all these experiences have been reported over and over again, you know, so it
right.
really seems like there's something going on in that.
Do you feel, do both of you feel that this is positive or negative or neither?
Well, these people that we've focused on, overwhelmingly negative.
Yeah,
really?
The related to the Greys, it always seems to be pretty much a negative experience. Some of these people have also had positive experiences with other beings, but not the Greys, and these are the ones who seem to be the predominant.
The one I had, it didn't. It scared me at first, but it really. I didn't think it was negative because he easily could have done anything he wanted, and maybe he did, but I don't remember. And there's a fellow by the name of Jim Maroney. I don't know if you're familiar with his case. Very well known case in Canada in 1987.
Oh,
you know that?
I remember reading about this.
He was taken, but when he was very upset and all the things going on, but they really communicated with him on a deeper level. And he said when they left, he cried because it felt like family. It felt like family to him.
Yeah. There's mixed feelings about what the Greys are about and whether they're negative or positive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this Diane Fine, who's had the missing pregnancy, she also has had a couple of positive experiences with these things. Like one time she was abducted, and she'd been having really bad knee problems. And she woke up on the familiar table and the surroundings, and she realized these three Greys were operating on her knee. And she said, hey, if you can fix my knee, then why don't you fix my immune system? And it was communicated to her that the knee was mechanical, but that the immune system problem she had was karmic.
Hmm. Wow.
So I thought that was
That's interesting, on a deeper level.
Right.
Interesting.
And after that, her knee was fine. She never had any problem with it afterwards.
So really, she was up to her to fix her own problem.
Yeah, right.
Which it is with all of us with illness, right? So
right.
Yeah, yeah.
So anything else you want to tell me about this? If people want to get the book, where can they go to find it?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble.
And also Crossroad Press.
They have
it in trade and also hardcover.
And also
for the various different reading devices.
What is your website? You both have separate websites, don't you?
Right. Let's see. We'll give you www.synchrosecrets.com.
Synchrosecrets.com.
And then there's the blog is synchrosecrets.com/synchrosecrets. That's the most active. That's where we have the daily stuff.
Right. And then we also both have our websites. Mine is robmcgregor.net. And what is yours, Trish?
Mine is trishjmcgregor.com.
Okay, good. I'm going to post all those once the interview's up. But
okay.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Would you think you're being... Do you think you're being guided to write about this? Do you think there's like a higher power or something pushing you to speak out about this?
Well, in a sense, yes, because this is the book we always wanted to write, but we could never figure out how to do it.
Mm.
You know, and it was like we had to write these first two synchronicity books first and do the blog and do the work You know what I mean?
Right.
And once we did that, then everything started coming together. So, yeah, I mean, in a sense, I think there is a higher, something higher here.
That's kind of pushing you.
Right, yeah. And, you know, this, we're not sure where this is going to lead, but I think it's just, it's about creating more awareness and and supposedly leading to a point where there will be disclosure, where people will find out that they are real and they are not only real, but they are here. But what they are is the big question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that,
and how many different ones are there out there that,
exactly.
that are coming?
And, yeah, and what are they? Are they? It just seems like the standard explanation of the nuts and bolts explanation that they're in spaceships coming from the different parts of the universe doesn't really work. It just seems to be that they're tied in with our minds, with our consciousness.
Do you think that maybe they were part of, since the creation, maybe from the beginning here?
Yeah, I've often wondered if they're us from the future.
Maybe they created us.
Yeah, as some people think we're an enslaved race by some of them, but also maybe they've been involved in, you know, it's funny, now that I think about it, here's another story, you know, and I've had two, you know, there are two positive stories I've heard about the Greys, and then I hear a lot of negative ones, so I don't know what to think, but there was a woman who I had on one of my very first shows, and she was taken, and they brought her in the ship, and there was proof she was gone because her husband woke up and she wasn't lying next to him. And so they were very concerned about her, and they were showing her events, and they were showing their own planet, and they were asking her what she felt was going on here. And then they gently returned her back to her bed, and her husband had gotten up because he was, you know, didn't know where she was, so he went and laid on the couch. And then so when she gets back in the bed, he's not in bed. And so, you know, I just wonder if maybe some are masquerading as darker ones, and maybe the ones that are, you know, the real Greys, maybe they're not the darker energies, because I've heard some good things about them as well.
Right. It's even with Charles, his experience for him seemed very negative and frightening. But after he had this experience, he came home from work that day and went out in the field and searched around, looked to see if there was any signs. He couldn't find anything. Then he went over to the farmers who had that field behind his house, went over to the farmer's house and asked the farmer if he had seen anything that morning, because he is always up by 5 o'clock milking the cows. And the farmer said he didn't know what he was talking about. And he said, "What did you see?" And so Charles didn't want to say, "Oh, I saw a UFO." And instead he says, "Well, I think there may have been ATV, people on ATVs riding behind the house. They might have been up to no good." And so he left and then went to his neighbor on the other side and asked them the same question, because they also get up early. And the man said, "No, he didn't look out in the back." But then his wife calls out from another room and says, "Charles, did you see a UFO?" And he's kind of taken aback, and he kind of doesn't respond directly. And she comes out, "You saw a UFO, didn't you?" And he says, "Why are you asking that?" And she says, "My cousin, who's a medium, called me about 2 weeks ago, and I hardly ever talk to this man. He's never been here. And he said his guides, spirit guides, told him to contact me and say that I might see a UFO in our backyard or behind the house." And that was 2 weeks ago. And you saw it, and I didn't.
there's this component of strangers in the know.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so he had some communication with this medium after that, and the medium felt that these beings were beings of light, he calls them, and were positive contacts. But Charles never felt that way. He said, "Why am I so afraid of them coming back if they are, you know, positive?"
And you know, and I've heard too. And there's a woman. Her name was Marilyn Rubin. She does a lot of investigation in Michigan. I don't know if she still has a site, but it was in Lower Michigan near Lansing, I think, where she was from. And we had a nice talk about that because she did tons of research on it. And she said a lot of people experience what they want to experience. If you if you're afraid, it's almost like it makes it worse. And if you are not, it's almost like maybe you're treated accordingly. I don't know. Isn't that how it works with all of us? It's like the way we're treated in life, the way we're treated with our soul, if we believe a certain thing. So
I think that's how life works.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, I don't know. My experience with the Greys at first was pretty scary, but it wasn't bad. I'm not afraid of them, and I wouldn't have seen him again if that was the case.
Well, you know, I had an experience that I didn't, we were on Dreamland with Whitley Strieber, and it wasn't until I was telling Ann Strieber about this experience I had that I realized that it involved three grays. Back in 2001, I went to an Eric Pearl conference. He's a chiropractor who discovered this new method of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And during the workshop, he has you pair up with a stranger, and you do these certain hand motions, never touching the person, over the person's body. And as this woman was running her hand, sweeping him over my body without touching me, suddenly this beam of light shot out of my head, went through the ceiling, and at the top of this beam of light, I saw these three entities looking down. And I didn't feel afraid. It was like they were curious. You know, they were jostling for a better position like little
mm-hmm.
kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, what's this about? And after the session, Pearl went around and asked people their experiences. So I told him mine. And he said that he felt that there was an interdimensional component to the healing work that he was doing.
Mm.
So skip ahead 4 or 5 years. It's hurricane season. We were in 2005, I think it was, Hurricane Frances stalled over our area and just dumped tons of rain over a period of 15 hours. And we could hear the skylights in our ceiling just like, you know, like a drum. And there was water coming under the door, and I thought, oh, my God, you know, our house is going to be flooded. So finally at 5 o'clock in the morning, I was laying in bed. Megan and our daughter and Rob were asleep, and I thought, I've just got to go to sleep. And suddenly that beam of light shot out of my head again. I saw the three entities, and I knew everything was going to be okay. I fell asleep. Next morning, the storm had moved on.
Hmm.
No house, no damage to the house. So that was my positive experience with these
mm-hmm.
beings.
With these beings. Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, there's the universe is a big place, so there are ones, just because we see a ship in the sky, oh, no, my brothers, let me go see my brothers. Maybe, maybe that's not always a good idea. But also, I think your attitude towards it, because really, you know, my show that I do, I don't know if you checked out my site, but there's a lot of metaphysical on it.
Right.
And it's like, you know, I think it all happens for a reason. We're all part
right.
of this big puzzle, you know? And so none of it is really horrible when you think about your soul. It's always going to go on. And maybe we agreed. Don't you think it's possible we agreed to let these things happen to us?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're looking at the larger picture now. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we often live in just the moment and seeing what's going on around us on a daily basis. But there, of course, is a larger picture that we can look to at some points to get perspective on our lives and how we fit into the larger cosmos. And you're right. These experiences could be appear to be negative, but on a larger scale, they could be something that we've agreed to participate in.
Yeah, go ahead. You can use me. Yeah, I'm a guinea pig. Go ahead and use me.
Yeah, right. One of the great mystics of the 20th century, who was Jane Roberts, who channeled an entity called Seth.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they did like 20 books together. And one of the things, Seth's basic tenet was you get what you concentrate on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other main
mm-hmm.
rule. You know, in other words, you want to empower something? Focus on it, whatever it is.
Yeah. Whatever you focus on the longest becomes the strongest.
That's right.
So if people want to find out more, they can get the book Aliens in the Backyard. Do you have any other projects coming up, other books or anything?
We've got a lot of backlist books.
Okay.
The two synchronicity books, Seven Secrets of Synchronicity and Synchronicity on the Other Side, which is about contact with the dead.
Oh, okay.
We're both writing novels now as well, but we usually don't like to talk about them while they're in the
I understand.
Because they'll probably be, the information will probably be wrong by the time the book comes out.
Well, I'd love to have you guys back on again to talk about anything.
That'd be
great.
Anything you want. It's really informative. Let me ask you real quick, Rob. Were you inspired by something greater when you were writing the Indiana Jones? Do you feel that those were inspired by some greater truth?
I think so. I look back and I just wonder how I was able to write those books, because I had 4-month deadlines. One day I finished one, I had to start on the next one. In 4 months, I had another deadline, 65,000 words. They had to involve actual...
A real artifact
or MacGuffin object that Indy would be searching for, and he a lot of you know, international travel, and I had to do a lot of research and come up with storylines. And I just don't know how I was able to do this. I did these six like that, one after another. And then after the sixth one, I said, I got to take a break. And they immediately hired somebody else.
Now, none of the books that you wrote, were any of them made into the movies?
No, none of the ones that I wrote were made into movies. However, my first novel, I only had one original novel at that time when I started this project. It was called Crystal Skull, and it was on that basis that I was hired by Lucasfilm from Crystal Skull. And, of course, when I found out that there was a new movie coming out that was about Crystal Skulls, I was very curious about it. And then I saw an interview with Lucas said, I first had this idea of writing a script about India involved in Crystal Skulls in 1992. Well, that was when I gave him the book.
And that was also, Rob was not tapped to do the novelization.
Right, yeah. I thought I was going to be involved in the novelization.
Boy, too bad you weren't on that one, huh?
Yeah. Of the fourth a book, but then suddenly they changed it and they had me write a totally different novel based on the Indiana Jones, the sixth version of Indiana Jones game.
You know what I was asking, Rob, I guess is, because I think there's a lot of truth that comes out, in the, especially like, the, you know, the fourth one with the UFO and all that stuff.
Right.
And, you know, all of them seem to have like a little, you know, Hitler was searching for the Ark. I mean, there's no question. So it seems like it's drawing from a higher place or a place where there's some greater truth. And I was going to ask you, do you think Hollywood is trying to tell us some things sometimes with some of the movies?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
I think so.
Especially with some of the things that Spielberg has done.
Right.
I think his influence.
Like Close Encounters. I really believe.
Right, yes.
You know, some people say that that actually happened, that our government has met with the beings like that. So.
Well, even some of the TV shows, you know, the 4400, that was a pretty compelling show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 4,400 people who were abducted, all of them were returned at the same time. They haven't aged a day.
Yeah. Mm. You know, the government maintains this facade that there's nothing really out there. You know, there's no aliens that are anywhere near the Earth and visiting us. But yet, it's amazing how many we track people coming to our blog oftentimes, and it's just amazing how many hits we get from government agencies such as Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
When we were working, I did a nine-part series on the Quebec encounters with Charles Fontaine, and those were tracked by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, which is like the Canadian version of the FBI. One day they spent 8 hours on our blog just going through all this information. You know, so there is definitely interest in it's being pursued, but they really keep it quiet.
Oh yeah, yes. And I'm not trying to challenge their authority. If they want to keep it quiet, that's up to them. I'm sure there's many reasons. I think I know what those reasons are, and that's fine with me. I'm not here to expose that. I'm just here to share stories, and eventually the truth will come out.
Yeah, it will. It always does.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we're also in a time where we're waking up. We're in great awakening is coming right now. And so,
and I think that's part of this increased frequency of sightings and abductions. I mean, it's like our consciousness is just being blown wide open.
Absolutely. Part of what some people call this shift.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. We got a lot to talk about again next time we do this.
Yeah.
So, Aliens in the Backyard, you can pick up the book. It's been out for how long?
Two days.
Brand new. We're all over it. Rob and Trish McGregor, I will talk to you again soon. Thank you very much for being on my show.
And thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy it.
Take care.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.